mother of demons, met the angel Raziel, lost his memories, gotten them back, and graduated from Shadowhunter Academy. And they'd all expected that would be it. A happily ever after for Simon. But it hadn't turned out that way. 4 months ago, Simon had indeed gone through the ritual of ascension to become a full-fledged shadow hunter, and what should have been a time of triumph and celebration for all of them had turned tragic, as Simon's closest friend at the academy, George Lovelace, had died during the ritual. Died horribly, as a matter of fact, in front of all of them. The memory sprang to his mind unbidden, of Simon throwing himself hopelessly at George's burning body and being held back by Katerina. Simon had taken George's name in honor of his memory. Considering this, Magnus had to admit it was actually stranger to see Simon break into a wryly amused smile as he took in the situation at the far end of the room. He ran to help Clary and Isabel, and Magnus gave Alec a look. "So the whole gang?" "Well," Alec said, "Jace thought Clary should come, and that seemed fine to me, and then Clary suggested that Simon should come along as well. He's her parapetai, after all. And with demon activity being pretty minimal these days, he could use some more on-the-ground experience. And then Isabel found out, and she was offended that I hadn't asked her first thing, and she said she was coming too." Magnus had to wonder whether it was wise for Simon to come along on this trip, and why Clary had insisted. She knew better than anyone, except maybe Isabel, how Simon was doing, and it was obvious that he wasn't doing well. He would have to remember to ask her about it later. For now, he clapped his hands very loudly, and the three shadow hunters stopped in their tracks. Simon was holding onto Max's arm as Max hung upside down above him, laughing delightedly. "All shadow hunters in my house," he called out. "If one of you would please put your hands out to catch my son, I'm going to deal with the spell, and where's the blonde kid with my coffee?" Magnus quickly annulled his son's spell with a few gestures, and Max returned to the ground, where he immediately crawled over to Alec and threw his arms around Alec's leg in excitement. Jace returned from the kitchen with the promised coffee, and Magnus finally sat down on the couch. "All right. So what's going on?" he asked. Isabel raised her eyebrows.
"First, does that happen with Max a lot?"
Magnus shrugged. "Not a lot. Warlock babies do some magic sometimes, by accident."
"It's not so bad," Alec said. "You just keep more extra clothes around, and you keep a fire extinguisher close by."
Jace hopped up to sit on the window ledge, somehow managing not to spill any of his coffee.
"I thought you were changing."
"I did change," Magnus said, puzzled.
"You're still wearing a robe," Jace said.
"I was wearing a yukata," said Magnus. "Now I'm wearing a dressing gown."
"Well, they both look like robes," said Jace.
"Let's talk about last night," Magnus said. "What did Alec tell you?"
"Can we see the glowing fissure in your chest?"
Simon asked.
"Simon, it's rude to bring up glowing fissures in other people's chests," said Clary. "What do you think they want with the Book of the White, Magnus?"
Magnus turned to look at Alec. "So you told them everything? Did you say the S word? The R word? Alec rolled his eyes. "If you're asking if I told them about Shinyun and Ragnar, I did."
"So you knew Ragnar wasn't dead that day I came to his house in Idris?"
Clary said.
"When I was with Sebastian, you lied to us?"
"I had to," said Magnus. "I couldn't risk anyone tracking Ragnar down and hurting him." He looked at the ceiling. "But then he dropped out of contact and I thought he was dead anyway."
"How do you feel now?"
said Clary. She looked concerned, more so than Magnus would have expected. "I feel fine," he said, and realized he was telling the truth. He felt good, even, as if he'd had a full night's sleep and a proper breakfast instead of barely any sleep and Jace's too strong black coffee. "That's not me putting on a brave face," he felt obligated to add. "I really do feel good. I'm not happy to have a magical glowing chest wound, but it doesn't seem to be doing me any harm."
other than the aesthetics, of course. Simon looked up from where he had gotten down on the floor with Max.
It's kind of working for you, actually. Adds to your overall mystique.
What Alec told us, said Isabel, is that Ragnarfell is alive. He's working with that warlock you dealt with in Europe a few years ago, and they took the Book of the White to do something that will be good for whatever greater demon they're working with.
And therefore bad for us, put in Simon.
Bad for the Earth, said Magnus.
That's bad for us, Simon confirmed. We live here.
Did you tell them which demon it is? Magnus demanded of Alec. To the others, he went on. What does the name Samael mean to you?
There was a silence.
Oh, said Jace. That's why you called, he added to Alec, who nodded.
He's a prince of hell, right? Said Clary.
A long-dead prince of hell, said Jace.
He was the consort of Lilith. Pity they missed each other by a few years. Lilith's power was much diminished since the Dark War, shattered by the mark of Cain while Simon bore it. Little had been seen of her since.
He's more than that, said Simon quietly.
He was looking at the floor, very unlike himself, and Magnus figured he was recalling his ordeal with Lilith.
Remember, I only got out of the academy a few months ago. I studied this stuff more recently than any of you.
He rose to his feet and leaned against the wall as if he needed bracing for what he was about to say.
Samael is the oldest of the princes of hell, other than Lucifer himself. He is supposed to have been the serpent in the Garden of Eden. He's known as the father of demons, just like Lilith is called the mother.
Everyone's got father issues, said Jace. Even demons.
Simon ignored him.
Shadowhunter history teaches that for thousands of years before the Shadowhunters, demons would make their way to our world, but only occasionally and in tiny numbers. Samael changed that. He did something. We don't know what. That weakened the barriers between our world and the demon worlds. Samael opened the path for demons to invade Earth, and when he came himself, devastation followed him. He couldn't be defeated by any human being, no matter how powerful. So the story says the angels themselves intervened, and the Archangel Michael came down and defeated Samael.
Jace was nodding and picked up the narrative.
And Raziel came down and created us. But nobody could undo what Samael had done, so the walls between the worlds remain thin and demons keep coming.
I guess defeating Samael at least prevented the problem from getting worse, said Clary.
I know princes of hell can't be killed.
The blow that defeated him was dealt by an archangel, said Magnus. I think everyone at least hoped it might actually kill him.
Seems not.
How do we get Michael to come back and defeat him again? Said Isabel. It'd buy us another 1,000 years.
We can't, said Simon. We're on our own. That's the whole thing with us, right, Shadowhunters? The angels aren't here to deal with our problems. It's just us.
He looked grim. Magnus felt a stab of renewed concern for Simon. He'd been fighting demons just as long as Clary had. He had been a downworlder himself, had been face to face with Raziel, and through all of it, Magnus had grown impressed with his morale, his willingness to persevere and keep a brave face even when the situation seemed worse than impossible. Simon had faced down Lilith and walked away. Why was just the idea of Samael enough to rattle him now? Simon had wanted to become a shadow hunter so badly, to fight demons directly, to be a colleague to Clary, to Isabel, to all of them. But just now, he didn't look like it had been good for him.
I know I'm the guy acting casual about a magical hole in my chest, said Magnus. But can I provide some context here that might make us feel a little better? Shinyun and Ragnar mentioned Samael. But other than this weapon Shinyun has, which she claims is his, we have no idea whether Samael is even coming back. Shinyun and Ragnar could be involved with a mundane cult or a greater demon pretending to be Samael. The important thing is Samael is definitely not in our world. If he was,
we'd know. He'd be doing things. Armies of demons would be ravaging the planet, and they're not. He smiled brightly. He really was feeling surprisingly positive about the situation. So Alec and I will go to Shanghai, and we'll track down Ragnar and Shinyan, and we'll get the Book of the White back, and everything will be great.
So what you're saying, Isabel said slowly, is that the good news is that Samael hasn't destroyed Earth yet?
Even if it is the real Samael, we probably have days to stop him, Magnus said. Clary and Isabel exchanged worried looks. Alec also looked worried. So Magnus, who's going to look after Max for days?
Magnus waved his hands at the assembled group.
Some of these fine people.
Are you kidding? Said Clary, jumping up. Obviously, we're all going to Shanghai. This is a big deal situation, right? You need the whole team.
Jace looked amused.
Sure. It can't possibly be that you're bored patrolling New York and want to go someplace new.
Okay, I am, Clary admitted. But also we have to stop the father of demons from, you know, fathering more demons, I guess.
A lot more demons, said Simon. Why not? Let's go fight two powerful warlocks and a demon so bad it took an angel to kill him last time. I'm sure all my classroom experience will come in handy.
Isabel came over and affectionately tousled Simon's hair.
Sure, sweetie. You're just a newbie. You were never an invulnerable daylighter vampire who's been to a hell dimension or anything.
You'll note the word invulnerable, Simon grumbled. But he smiled a little, at least.
Magnus stood up and clapped his hands.
All right, my lovelies. Alec and I will need to pack our things and figure out what we're doing with this one. He gestured at Max, who Jace had hoisted onto his shoulders. Dutifully, Jace put Max back on the ground. You'll all no doubt need to return to the Institute to collect your gear, so, he waved his arms, get out of my house.
They had all left but Clary. Alec had taken Max into the bedroom, and Magnus was headed to join them when Clary suddenly grabbed his arm and said in a quiet but intense tone,
I need to talk to you for a moment.
Magnus regarded her. It was so strange to see her now, a proper adult. For years, she had been a quiet, wide-eyed child whom he'd met over and over for the first time. She knew nothing of the shadow world, and it had been Magnus's job to make sure that remained true. And so, when her mother would bring her over, she always had the same reaction. Awe. Uncertainty. Each time, she noticed his eyes, luminous and slit pupils. Each time, he expected her to be frightened, but she was only ever curious. When she got old enough, she would ask him, Why do you have cat eyes? He got to try out plenty of responses.
Well, I traded them with my cat. Now he has human eyes. The better to see you with, my dear. Why do you not have cat eyes?
It was strange to know that Clary didn't share those memories, to have watched someone grow up without them remembering it. Until, of course, the day he saw her at Chairman Miao's birthday party, surrounded by New York's shadow hunters, and, without warning, transformed into the warrior she had been born to be. Already the spitting image of Jocelyn at her age. Now she looked uneasy, as though she was thinking about how to deliver bad news. A few years ago she would have just blurted it out, but now she was his friend and she was concerned about his feelings. It was nice, but strange. She said,
I had a dream about you this morning, just before Alec's call woke us up.
A funny dream? Magnus said hopefully. And not an ominous prophetic dream, right?
I stopped having those after the Dark War, so I hope not.
You seem to be having a good time, actually, said Clary. You were on a big golden throne.
I had that dream too, said Magnus. At the top of lots of stairs, I was being attended by gray creatures with beaks.
No,
said Clary, looking concerned. but you had become a 100-foot-tall monster.
Magnus nodded thoughtfully.
Are we talking a Godzilla-type situation?
More like a demon situation. You had huge, sharp teeth and long claws coming out of your fingers. There was something wrong with your eyes, and there was...
She paused.
There was a red fire in the shape of an X burning from within your chest.
Well, said Magnus heavily, I have some good news. There is only one line of fire burning on my chest right now, not an X. Prophetic dream understood. Avoid getting another cut in the shape of an X. Excellent advice.
There's more, said Clary. The confusing part.
So far this has been very straightforward, agreed Magnus.
You were in chains, like in lots of chains. Your legs were chained to the ground, your arms and your shoulders and your waist all chained to the wall. Huge chains with huge iron links. You were weighed down by them. It was amazing you weren't literally crushed to death under their weight.
Magnus had to admit that did seem bad.
But here's the thing, Clary said. You didn't look like you were in pain or even bothered. You looked happy. More than happy, you looked ecstatic. You looked triumphant.
She fixed her gaze on Magnus.
I don't know what it means. Like I said, I don't have prophetic dreams anymore, usually. But I thought I should tell you anyway.
Better safe than sorry, said Magnus. I hope it's totally abstract. Like, I will be sad, but happy about being sad. Something like that. Rather than involving actual iron chains or having bigger teeth.
Well, here's hoping, said Clary.
Run along to the Institute, Magnus said. I should go check on my family. Clary departed, and Magnus, uneasy for the first time since the morning, went to find Alec and their son and hold them close for a moment, just to warm himself up. Chapter 3. A Brief Farewell. Alec was getting a little frustrated. He'd called Katerina and asked if she could look after Max for a couple of days, only to find out that she was working double shifts at the hospital and would barely be home, though she did agree to stop in and feed Chairman Meow in the evenings. He'd called Maya, who turned out to be hosting Friends of Bats. He'd considered, but rejected, calling Lily. Lily often spoke of how Max was so delicious that she just wanted to eat him up. And while Alec trusted Lily, he was not completely sure she was speaking figuratively.
What about your mother?
Magnus said. He had put Max into an iridescent magical bubble and was rolling him around the bedroom while Alec fetched suitcases from the back of their closet.
What? No, Alec said.
He watched Max for a moment.
Is he in a magical hamster ball?
No. Well, kind of, yes, said Magnus. He likes it. Why not your mother?
This kid floats up to the ceiling sometimes, said Alec. He sets a blanket on fire in his sleep every 3 weeks or so.
Another advantage of the magical hamster ball, said Magnus. Magic shield. I didn't want Max knocking out the neighbor's cable again.
Well, my mother doesn't have a magical hamster ball, said Alec.
Magnus rolled Max out into the hallway to squeals of delight and called back,
She's a shadow hunter. She's supposed to be able to handle warlocks. She raised you.
He ducked his head back into the bedroom and raised his eyebrows.
She raised Jace.
All right, said Alec, laughing. You win. I'll call her.
It took them 20 minutes to pack their things, and then 2 hours to assemble Max's gear, which was strewn all over the apartment. It hadn't seemed like a lot of stuff, but when it was all in one place, it made quite a haul. His stroller,
his pack and play, a huge stack of clothes, a cardboard box of baby food, and a black satchel into which Magnus stuffed a few of Max's favorite picture books and toys, and also some components for the more useful wards to handle Max's accidental magic. Eventually, after fishing a recalcitrant Chairman Meow out of the satchel, where he'd gone to sleep, they departed and made their way to the Institute. The New York Institute was a solemn stone castle amid towers of metal and glass. Magnus liked the churches of New York, the way they carved a hushed and sacred space into the bustle of the city. Maybe that was why he had always found the self-seriousness of the Shadow Hunters oddly charming. They tended to be flippant about it, if you asked, even Alec. But the Institute was a reminder, even when it would be easy to forget, that theirs was a divine assignment. It could be both good and bad that warlocks were so much more idiosyncratic and disorganized. Even the idea of high warlocks had started as a joke, an affectation among the rare warlocks of the 16th and 17th centuries who were able to achieve some prestige in the mundane society that mostly rejected them as monsters. Magnus would estimate that a good half of the high warlocks in the world today had appointed themselves to the position. Even cities with a long history of high warlocks, like London, still mostly named them as a result of dares at parties. Magnus was, in fact, one of those self-appointed warlocks. The whole joke about his being the high warlock of Brooklyn was that no other New York borough had a high warlock at all. He'd hoped to popularize the idea, but so far nobody had stepped up, except for a young woman with a unicorn horn sticking out of her forehead who had declared herself the medium warlock, also of Brooklyn. But over the years, he'd come to feel it as a kind of real responsibility. And the Shadow Hunters, he'd learned fast, were thrilled to have a warlock they could reliably call upon. Even the Lightwoods, who, when they came to run the Institute in New York, Magnus had known only as members of a famous Shadow Hunter hate group. And Magnus, for his part, was thrilled to have a steady, recurring revenue stream. When he'd heard they were coming, Magnus took a deep breath, added a 15% nuisance fee to his already monstrous rates, and when it was absolutely necessary, breezed into the Institute and tried to keep things light. "How have you been? Lovely non-apocalyptic weather we're having. Enjoy this beautiful spell you don't deserve. Please pay my absurdly high bill promptly. Am I providing regular protection spells for fugitives in hiding from the Nephilim? Why, no." It was strange to walk into that same Institute with a Lightwood next to him, holding their child. To have Marie's Lightwood as something more like family and less like a business partner he could never fully trust. He was glad that Robert, at least, was busy with Inquisitor business in Idris, inquisiting some folks, he assumed. The entrance hall of the Institute stretched high above them, silent and dim and imposing. It always seemed to Magnus that the small group of Shadow Hunters who lived here really rattled around the place. He knew it well, but in the manner that he might know a hotel lobby he'd passed through many times. It was not his place, and despite the efforts of the Lightwoods and Jace to make him feel comfortable here, he remained almost unconsciously on guard. 3 years of close collaboration and friendship with the local Shadow Hunters did not erase decades of more tense times spent here. For one thing, it meant that he whispered to Alec, even though there was no reason at all to whisper. It just felt true to the aesthetics of the place. "Where is everyone?" Alec shrugged, striding across the hall as if he owned the place, which Magnus supposed he sort of did. "I expect everyone's off gathering gear and weapons. We should just go find my mother." "How do you propose to find her?" Magnus said. "Ah," said Alec. "The Institute has a very old magic woven into its walls. I shall now use it to commune with my mother, wherever she might be found." He put his hands around his mouth
and bellowed at the top of his lungs. "Mom!" Alec's voice reverberated impressively against the stone walls. Max giggled and yelled, "Ma!" alongside Alec. The sound faded away, and Magnus waited.
"Well," he said, and Alec held up a finger.
After a moment, there was a flare, and a fire message appeared in front of him. He plucked it from the air and opened it, giving Magnus a superior look. "She's in the library," he read. A second fire message appeared in the same spot as the first. Alec opened it. "Did you know you can send fire messages within the Institute?" he read. "I just found out." He looked at Magnus in bewilderment. "Of course I knew that."
"To the library, then," said Magnus.
A third fire message appeared. Max lunged to try to grab it, but it was too far above his head. Magnus grabbed that one and read,
"I love fire messages. Have a great day, your friend Simon Lovelace Shadowhunter. Can we go?"
They heard a fourth one burst behind them as they left by the hall door, but neither of them looked back at it.
"I promise you," said Maryse, "I can completely handle Max for a few days."
Alec's mother was standing in the center of the library near the desk where their old tutor had once sat. She was tall in the same way Isabel was tall, unapologetically taking up space in the world, standing so straight she seemed even taller than she was. She folded her arms as though daring Alec and Magnus to disagree.
"Mom,"
Alec said, rubbing the back of his neck, "I just don't want you to have to deal with any emergencies. He's a warlock."
"You're kidding," said Maryse. "I thought he had a terrible accident with a fountain pen."
Max lay on his stomach on the rug between them, doodling with Maryse's steely on an old beaten-up shield she had found in the cellar the last time Max was over. The steely left sparking bright lines across the steel surface that faded slowly to black. Max was extremely into it.
"You know, you've gotten sassier recently," said Magnus, eyes twinkling.
He had opened the satchel and was unloading toys and books onto Maryse's desk. She didn't seem to mind.
"I'm just saying," Alec pressed on. "He was floating on the ceiling this morning. He doesn't really have any control yet over the magical stuff he does."
"Alec, I raised you, Jace, Max, and Isabel, and you were plenty of trouble. I will be fine. Also, most of the time, Kadir would be here."
As though he'd been waiting for his cue, Kadir Safar swept into the room. He was a tall, dark-skinned man with elegant features and a sharply defined goatee. Alec was not exactly clear on Kadir's official title at the Institute, but in recent months he had evidently become Maryse's second-in-command. He had helped train Alec, Isabel, and Jace growing up, and was a man of few words and fewer expressions. Alec had always felt they understood each other.
"Did you need me?" Kadir said to Maryse, hands behind his back.
His eyes scanned the desk and its new pile of colorful objects.
"Your grandchild's belongings, I assume. What do you have there, Magnus?"
Magnus held a stack of picture books in his hands that he'd just withdrawn from the bag. He waved them at Kadir.
"I hope you're prepared for all the reading this kid will demand."
He began placing books on the desk one at a time.
"Good Night, Moon, The Pokey Little Puppy, Where the Wild Things Are."
Huge right now in our house. Main character is also named Max.
"I am familiar,"
said Kadir, drawing himself up with dignity, "with Where the Wild Things Are. There's this one, which I guess is called Truck. It has a different kind of truck on each page with its name," Magnus went on. "Max is very enthusiastic about it, but I warn you, it has no narrative propulsion."
"Truck,"
confirmed Max. Warlocks tended to talk early, and Max was no exception. He'd said his first word, Newt, when he was only 9 months old, causing Magnus to hide his spell components. "And of course," said Magnus, "there is the very small mouse who went a very long way by Courtney Gray Weiss." Alec let out a long groan.
"Not a favorite," said Maurice. "I don't know that one, but it doesn't sound bad."
"Lily brought it to us," Alec said. "I have no idea where she found it. It must have been in the Hotel du Mort."
"For decades," agreed Magnus.
"The very small mouse does indeed go a very long way, but she does so in order to learn very outdated moral lessons about personal hygiene."
"Hmm,"
said Maurice and Kadir.
"It is his favorite," Magnus said, shaking his head. "Unfortunately."
Alec took a dramatic breath and proclaimed, "Now wash your feet, O little mouse, or you will never find a spouse."
"Mouse?"
Max said, perking up. Kadir held up his hand.
"I look forward to discovering it for myself. Now, if there's nothing else, Maurice?"
"Stay a moment," Maurice insisted. "I wanted to tell Alec the news. Alec, I've asked Jace if he would take over soon as the head of the Institute. I hope you don't mind."
Alec tried to hide the surprise on his face. Not that his mother would ask Jace to run things, but that she would stop running the Institute herself at all. She'd given no hint of it. He wanted to ask why, but held himself back, uncertain.
Magnus had no such qualms. "But why would you step down?"
Maurice shook her head.
"Running an Institute is a young person's job. It needs someone with the energy to be a full-time shadow hunter and also keep up relationships with the downworlders, manage the members of the conclave, stay in touch with the council. It's a lot."
"But it's gotten easier," said Alec. "Not that you don't deserve a rest. The Alliance has really changed how closely in communication Downworld and the conclave are."
He felt himself flush a little.
He always felt like he was bragging when he mentioned the Downworld or Shadowhunter alliance that he had put together with Maya Roberts, who led New York's largest werewolf pack, and Lily Chen, who was the head of New York's vampires. But he was proud of the work they'd done.
"It has," said Maurice. "And Alec, I appreciate all the effort you put in there. That's why I didn't ask you to run the Institute. You've got plenty going on already, not to mention the little bluebell here."
Max looked up, sensing that someone wished to admire him. He grinned winningly at Alec, and his head burst into blue flames.
"Oh, dear," said Maurice, blinking and jerking back.
Kadir's expression did not change at all, as he took a glass of water from Maurice's desk and poured it over Max, putting out the flames. Max blinked in surprise, then began to cry. Kadir raised an eyebrow at Alec.
"Sorry about that."
Maurice scooped up Max, who quickly forgot that his head was wet in favor of grabbing for Maurice's earrings.
"It's as good a solution as any," Magnus said. "Better a crying kid than a house on fire."
"An apt aphorism," said Kadir.
For Kadir, this was close to a declaration of undying love.
"What did Jay say?" said Alec. "Is he going to do it?" "He said he needed time to think," said Maurice.
She looked uncertain.
"I'm sure he'll accept," she said.
"I'm surprised he hasn't mentioned it to you, actually. I half thought you'd already know my news."
"He hasn't brought it up at all," said Alec.
He was troubled.
Why hadn't Jace mentioned it?
Even if he had doubts, who else would be better to talk about them with than his parabatai? And what would Jace have to worry about anyway? Alec knew he would kill it as head of the Institute.
"I can't imagine he wants to be the guy who has to uphold the cold peace," said Magnus mildly.
"Has he talked to you about it?" said Alec.
Magnus had a good point, though. The Cold Peace was the name for the terrible relationship between fairies and shadow hunters at the moment. After a good number of the Fae had sided with the enemies of the Nephilim a few years back, the Shadowhunters had sanctioned them harshly and strong-armed them into signing a treaty that left them unprotected and badly weakened. Things had been somewhat more than tense ever since. Many Shadowhunters, and especially the Shadowhunters of the New York Institute, hated the Cold Peace and would have happily seen the restoration of normal relations. But it was the job of the Institute to uphold the law, which was hard. But it was the law, and so on.
"He hasn't said a word to me," said Magnus. "It's just a guess."
Marie shrugged. "I've been juggling the Clave's expectations about the Cold Peace and the realities of New York's downworld for 3 years. It can be done. Jace can be good at politics if he decides to be, and I won't be dead. I'll still be living here and have plenty of advice on the subject of the Cold Peace." She sighed. "I admit I'd hoped that you would have some insight into Jace's thinking."
"I don't yet," said Alec, though he wasn't sure when in their big group outing he would be able to get a few minutes with Jace to ask him in private.
"Much of my advice," put in Kadir, "about working around the Cold Peace would involve going through you and your alliance."
Speaking of which, should you tell them you're going to China today?" said Magnus. Alec hadn't thought of that.
"I really should," he said.
He dug out his phone, and one text later he got a quick response from Maya. "I'm in the sanctuary." Alec got up.
"Maya says she's in the sanctuary? Did any of you know she was here? Or even that she was coming?"
He exchanged a glance with Magnus that he'd developed over the past months. The wordless question, "Is it okay to leave Max with you while I do a thing?" And the wordless nod back. It was strange to have created a new language between himself and Magnus, one that was just for their family.
"Maybe she's here to tell you that she can see the future," said Magnus. "Ask her how Shanghai's going to go."
Alec excused himself and headed out into the hall, then down the stairs to the sanctuary. There he found Maya waiting, looking very proud of herself.
"Alec," she said, "good to see you."
She stuck out her hand for him to shake. Alec took her hand in some confusion. They were not big handshakers, the two of them. He realized what was going on as his hand passed through Maya's, and she yelled a delighted, "Ha!" Alec recovered his balance and gave her a disapproving look.
"You're a projection."
"I'm a projection," said Maya, throwing her hands over her head. "So exciting."
"So that means
we finally have projections working in the den."
"The den?" said Alec, raising an eyebrow. "New name for headquarters?" said Maya.
The werewolves of Manhattan were based in an abandoned police station in Chinatown.
"I'm trying it out."
Alec nodded thoughtfully.
"I'm cautiously in favor of it." "Good to know. So apparently there's a fairy ring directly under the station, and that's why things weren't working. I guess it's been there since, like, the founding of New York."
"A fairy ring?" Alec wasn't sure how to ask the next question, which was, how do we deal with that problem, given that the Alliance isn't technically supposed to be in communication with fairies?
"Look, I never talked to a fairy about this situation," Maya said. "I talked to a warlock. She talked to someone at the Shadow Market. Then one day, projections work, and someone leaves a wicker basket of acorns on the front stoop."
"That's very autumnal," said Alec.
"One thing about fairies, they are committed to the aesthetic," Maya agreed. "Anyway, what's this about Shanghai?"
"Missing magic book. Magnus feels responsible. We've both got to go. It shouldn't be more than a few days. And it might be a dead end, and we'll be back in an hour," Alec added, although he didn't think that was likely.
"So is there Alliance stuff you need to tell me?"
"God, no," said Alec. "You and Lily can certainly handle Alliance business for a few days. I might miss game night, though." Maya sighed.
Oh, without you there, Lily's going to make us play charades or whist or something. She's such an old lady sometimes. A drunk old lady. Maya, Alex said disapprovingly. Oh, you know I love her, Maya said. Did you consider bringing her along? She speaks Mandarin, for one thing. Just last week I heard Lily say in my presence the full sentence, I want to never again in my life set foot within the borders of China. So, you know, Magnus also speaks Mandarin. Of course he does, said Maya. There is one thing, said Alec. My mom is watching Max while we're away. She's never watched him for more than, like, a few hours. Can you keep an eye on them? I'm sure Max will be fine, said Maya. Honestly, I'm more worried about my mother, said Alec. I'll stop by a few times, Maya said. I'm sure I can come up with some boring bureaucratic reasons I need to come to the Institute anyway. Anyway, she suddenly looked up and passed him. You have company. Alec turned in surprise to see Jace, Clary, Simon, and Isabel, all in gear and fully armed. They were mostly holding their usual favorite weapons. Simon, his bow, Clary, her sword, Isabel, her whip. Jace, for some reason, was carrying a kind of spiked flail on a chain. They and Maya waved. Jace waved very carefully due to the flail and exchanged hellos. We made a pile of our luggage, Clary said, gesturing vaguely behind her, so Magnus can teleport it later if we need to stay overnight. Got the projection working, I see, Simon said to Maya approvingly. He gave her a thumbs up. Wait, how can you tell she's a projection? Said Alec. You can totally tell, Jace said. You just get a feel for it. You do? Said Alec. Yeah, Simon nodded. Huh. What's with the, flail, Jace? It's a morning star, said Clary in deeply mournful tones. Morning stars don't have chains, said Alec. It's a flail. He wants us to call it a morning star, said Clary, even more gloomily. You're not even a Morgenstern, she said to Jace. I'm a Morgenstern. I'm still closely associated with the name, Jace insisted. I was just feeling like, can I pull off having a Morningstar as my signature weapon? Is it me? You mean, can you avoid looking like a heavy metal album cover? Said Simon. I don't know what that is, and I don't want to, said Jace. I just mean, am I cool enough? Of course you are, honey, said Clary. Look, she added to Alec, I see the concern on your face. I figure we let this run its course for a week or so. If it doesn't burn out by then, we can step in. Fair enough, said Alec. It's a trial run, agreed Jace. Maybe I won't like it, and I'll stop using the Morning Star. I've got Seraph Blades, too, obviously. And, I don't know, probably 4 or 5 knives on my person that were already in the pockets of my clothes when I put them on. Alec felt a rush of fondness for his parabatai. I wasn't worried. They said their goodbyes to Maya, and she disappeared just as Magnus appeared at the door of the sanctuary. He changed clothes. Only the angel knew where he had gotten the new outfit from, and was now in a velvet suit in dark navy with a matching navy shirt and tie. Alec had always secretly found Magnus to be at his absolute most handsome in a suit, and was pleased that his boyfriend had gone in that direction. He also noted that it prevented any possibility of his glowing wound being visible. Behind Magnus was Alec's mother, holding Alec's son. It still felt strange, even after half a year, to think, my son. Strange, but good. Maurice and Max were both waving excitedly. Wish your daddy's luck on their mission, Maurice said. Let's hope they get the magic book back from the bad woman who stole it. Alec nodded. They had all agreed, at Magnus's pleading, not to tell the Clave about Ragnar. So all Maurice knew was that a warlock named Xin Yun Zheng of Magnus's acquaintance, who was bad news, had stolen the Book of the White, and that they were going to Shanghai to find her. Alec went over to them and kissed Max's forehead. Be nice to your grandma, okay, kiddo? Max put his hand on Alec's nose, and Alec quickly turned, gave his mother a kiss on the cheek, and retreated successfully without choking up. You kids be careful out there, Maurice said. Isabel said, Mom, we're grown-ups. I know, said Maurice, leaning forward to embrace her daughter. She turned to Jace, and after a brief standoff, he also allowed her to hug him. But be careful anyway. She blew Magnus a kiss and retreated, closing the door behind her. Alec began to laugh. This is not the way I'm used to launching a mission. It's very emotional compared to the old way. Jace said, You mean sneaking out under cover of darkness? I myself don't miss it.
So we're already in the sanctuary, Magnus said. I may as well make the portal right here.
With some flourishes, he applied himself to the portal's construction. Alec watched him. Magnus could be extremely elegant, even when he was giving it the least thought. The dexterity with which he went through the gestures and words that made up the portal summoning was a beautiful thing to behold, a reminder that Alec not only loved Magnus, but also continued to admire so much about him. His reverie was interrupted when the portal opened, and Magnus's expression changed from concentration to alarm. The view through the portal definitely did not look like it was of a place on Earth. The colors were wrong. Out of it swarmed a dozen demonic beetle creatures, each about the size of a basketball. Magnus yelled in surprise and began to wave frantically, working to shut the portal. Alec drew a seraph blade, murmured Calc-Eel to it, and leaped at the nearest beetle. They're Elytra demons, called Simon. I think. Any further insights to share about them? Said Jace, drawing his flail. Other than their name? Greetings, Elytra demons. Welcome to our dimension. Your time here will be instructive but short. I have an insight, said Isabel. She swiftly gave a kick to the nearest beetle. When it flipped onto its back, she plunged a blade into the soft body under its hard carapace. Kick him over.
Roger that, said Jace.
He spun his flail and, after a moment's winding up, smashed it into the side of an Elytra, which promptly crumpled and vanished.
That also works, by the way, if you've got a flail with you.
Ha! I told you it was a flail! Yelled Alec, kicking over a beetle of his own. They made quick work of the demons. When things were quiet again, Alec immediately made for Magnus, who had barely gotten a wrinkle in his suit, though Alec had seen him dispatch two of the beetles himself with bolts of blue fire. What happened? He said. Magnus shook his head.
I have no idea. That was Shanghai, but not our Shanghai. That doesn't usually happen. And by that, I mean that doesn't ever happen. You don't open a door to an alternate world by accident. It's hard enough to do on purpose.
He looked around at them. Clary, can you try? Just try reactivating the one I closed. Clary looked at Magnus in surprise. Alec schooled his own expression, but he was just as taken aback. Of course, Clary said. She took out her steely and went to work. Into the ensuing silence, Alec said, Could it be because of the thorn? Someone had to, after all. Magnus hesitated.
I don't know, he admitted. We've been rushing around getting ready to leave, and I haven't so much as Googled the word Sveffenthorn.
I Googled it, Jace said, to Alec's surprise. While we were getting our stuff together.
You, said Alec, Googled it.
Yeah, said Jace. It sounded Norse. So I went into the library and I looked it up in the Saga Concordances. Like a normal person. That's Googling, right?
More or less, said Simon.
And?
Said Isabel. Jace shrugged.
It means Thorn of Sleep. It shows up a few times. Some god uses a Sveffenthorn to put another god into a magical slumber. You know, usual god stuff.
It didn't put me to sleep, Magnus said doubtfully. Nobody mentioned sleep.
Well, that's just mundane mythology, Jace said.
I didn't have time to go into our own texts or anything demonic.
Unluckily, said Magnus, I fear that the library of the Shanghai Institute may mostly be in Chinese. Luckily, we happen to be traveling to a city that is home to one of the greatest wonders of Downworld, the Celestial Palace.
How is the palace going to help? Said Simon.
Because, said Magnus, clearly relishing this, which Alec found adorable, the Celestial Palace is that greatest of things. A bookstore.
From where she was working a few yards away, Clary waved her arms. She had the portal open.
It looks okay, she said uncertainly.
Magnus came to peer through it and shrugged.
Sky's the right color. There are stars. Moon's out. Buildings look right. No giant beetles. I say we go for it.
That's a very inspiring speech, Magnus, said Jace.
What the hell?
Said Isabel. They gathered together and walked through the portal. The cool breeze became a soft, enveloping cloud of humidity. The low rumble from outside the sanctuary windows was replaced by a cacophonous, honking orchestra of cars and the steady clamor of a crowded city street at evening. Bright-colored lights flickered, animated and swirling in the night sky, and Alec's world tilted.
That sky was in the wrong place. And he was falling. They were all falling. They were falling quite a while.
Part 2. Shanghai. Chapter 4. Heavenly Places.
It was a wonder they didn't hurt anyone. The Shadow Hunters emerged through the pearlescent frame of the portal into thin air, 12 feet off the ground, and fell to the pavement amid an enormous, bustling crowd of people. They all landed safely, or at least cushioned themselves well enough to suffer only a few bruises. Alec carefully got to his feet, glad to be glamored into invisibility. Wherever in the city they were, it was crowded. It was full evening in Shanghai, a pleasantly warm one, and as he straightened up, Alec realized they stood on a massive pedestrian thoroughfare that extended in both directions beyond the distance he could see. The crowds were thick, Manhattan thick, and both sides of the street were lined with buildings shining with huge, brightly lit signs. Every wall was flooded with neon color and vivid advertisements. Large vertical signs in Chinese characters hung from each building into the streets, painting the walls in an electric rainbow of blue, red, and green. In the distance, a needle-shaped structure shot up into the night sky, glowing in waves of dazzling purple. Around it was the rest of the Shanghai skyline, some of it half-finished and surrounded by cranes, other parts lit up to stand as totems above the teeming city below. There were English signs among the Chinese.
"It looks like Times Square," Isabel said brightly. "Shanghai Times Square."
"It's much cooler than Times Square," Simon said, gazing around at the spectacle before him. "More neon and lasers and banks of colored lights, fewer giant video screens."
"There are plenty of giant video screens," said Clary. "And it's not Times Square. Well, I guess it kind of is, but it's more like Fifth Avenue.
We're on East Nanjing Road. It's a big shopping area with no cars."
"So," said Simon,
"you thought better hit up the sales before we find the evil warlocks?"
"They're not necessarily evil," Alec said.
"The, misguided warlocks."
"The misguided warlocks who make terrible decisions," amended Isabel.
"No," said Clary. "I mean, I was reading about this place on my phone this morning. I was just looking up the famous places to go in Shanghai. I wasn't trying to end up here. I was trying to go to the Institute, and this is nowhere near it."
"Also," said Alec with a jolt, "where's Magnus?" They looked around. Alec was keeping a clamp on his feelings, the way you might put pressure on a bleeding wound. He couldn't panic now. That wouldn't be helpful to Magnus.
Clary, can you see him through the portal? He demanded. Is Magnus still back on the other side?
He squinted at the small glowing square floating well above their heads. Clary backed up and shook her head.
No, nothing.
Alec took out his phone and called Magnus. He did not pick up. Alec continued not to panic. Instead, he sent a text. We are in Nanjing Road shopping area. Where you? They stood there, waiting, with the unseeing crowd streaming around them, hidden within their glamours. Alec wasn't sure what they would do if they couldn't find Magnus. Would they just have to keep going through with the mission? How would that even work? Magnus was the only one of them who spoke Mandarin. Magnus had the scrap of Ragnar's cloak that was necessary to track him. They could go to the Institute, itself a project involving getting cash, finding a taxi, and so on. But even there, Magnus had spoken of his long relationship with the Kuh family who ran the place. Alec had expected to have Magnus's help when they arrived. The others were all looking at Alec, worriedly. Jace had come a little closer, not quite putting his hand on Alec's shoulder, but as if he were about to. And indeed, Alec knew if Magnus didn't appear, and soon, there would be no more mission, no matter how many intellectual exercises he ran about it in his head. Even if the danger of a prince of hell loomed in the future, Alec would abandon everything else and go after Magnus first, wherever he might be. Alec's phone beeped. He grabbed at it, flipping it over. It was a message from Magnus. They all crowded around to read it. Took an unexpected swim. Meet me in front of the McDonald's near Guizhou Road. Alec felt Jace's hand graze his back lightly. A silent reassurance. See, brother, everything is fine.
Of course there's a McDonald's, said Isabel.
And they headed off, using the GPS on Simon's phone to guide them. Sometimes Alec thought that eventually the modern world would overtake the Shadowhunters, despite their best attempts to stay out of it. It was inevitable if you lived in a big city. Just navigating your way around took a certain understanding of the mundane world and how it worked. Here Alec had been dropped into one of the most crowded spots in one of the biggest cities in the world, about as far from his home as he could get while remaining on the planet. And yet he felt a certain familiarity. Big city shopping streets were big city shopping streets. The signs were in Chinese, and the aesthetic wasn't the same, but the feel was the same. The night, and the lights, and the people, families, strange pairings, solo workers just trying to get through the crowd to get home. It should have been totally alien to Alec. But it wasn't. It was new, but there was something there he already understood. He was surprised to find how many things in his life worked that way when he gave them a try. They met Magnus at the point where the pedestrian part of the road ended and the car traffic began. The warlock's hair was strangely soaking wet and spiked angrily up above his head. His clothes were dry, but they were not the same clothes he had been wearing when they went through the portal. Alec was a little disappointed. He loved Magnus in a suit. But Magnus had perhaps wisely chosen to blend in black jeans, a sleek black button-down shirt, and a black leather motorcycle jacket. He looked like a sexy urban race car driver. Alec was in favor of it. He swept up to Alec, put his arms around his neck, and kissed him. Alec kissed him back, passionately, relief coursing through his veins. He would have liked to grab handfuls of Magnus's shirt and drag him closer, kiss him until they were both staggering, but he was standing in front of his sister and his parabatai and his parabatai's girlfriend and her parabatai. He had to draw a line somewhere. He did kiss Magnus back as strongly as he was able. Magnus was here, he was fine, and Alec could feel his body relax.
I guess you didn't get to the Institute either, said Clary, when a significant amount of time had passed.
Magnus broke the kiss.
Is it all right for two men to kiss in a crowded street in Shanghai?
I don't know if I'd kiss you that way in Times Square, said Alec.
Darling, Magnus said quietly, we're invisible.
Oh, said Alec, right.
I did not go to the Institute, no, said Magnus to Clary. I went to 30 or so feet above the Huangpu River. He saw Alec's look of alarm. Then a few seconds passed, and I was in the Huangpu River.
What did you do? Said Jace.
I tumbled through the air gracefully and landed on my feet on the back of a friendly porpoise, said Magnus. That is very believable, said Simon, encouraging as always. Magnus waved his hand. That is how I wish you to think of me, riding a porpoise to shore and straight to join you. I don't understand it. That's two portals in a row that have gone wrong, in ways portals should not go wrong. How did we get split up?
I think, said Jace, we were all hoping you would know.
I just draw 'em, said Clary. That doesn't mean I understand the magic behind them. No more portals for a while anyway, said Magnus. He pulled the scrap of Ragnar's cloak from his pocket with a flourish and handed it over to Alec.
Jace took out his steely and gestured to Alec, who dutifully held out his hand for Jace to refresh the tracking rune.
The rune is still just going to pull us in a direction, and Shanghai is huge, said Alec. How are we going to handle this?
We are going to take a taxi, said Magnus, holding his arm out to the street. So unglamour yourselves.
The taxis in Shanghai appeared to be an assortment of colors, but they were all silver on their bottom half and the same model of car, so it was pretty easy to spot them in traffic. One, a vivid shade of violet, quickly pulled over for them. Magnus eyed the size of their group.
Two taxis.
Alec waved down a second taxi, and Magnus quickly spoke to the driver of the new taxi, then went to get into the first one.
Wait, what did you tell him? Alec said.
I told him to follow the first cab, and that the dark-haired man with the bright blue eyes would be handling the fare.
He hesitated.
Alec, if Ragnar doesn't know we're tracking him, and he's in Shanghai, he'll still be here tomorrow morning. If you don't want to go racing off without anything to go on but this tracking rune, I totally get that.
We can take a couple of hotel rooms. I know some great places, and tomorrow morning we can go to the Institute and do this through the proper channels.
Alec tried not to be thrown by this total about-face.
Magnus, I'm touched, but I have to wonder, are you avoiding catching up to Ragnar because you don't know what to do when you find him? Is that what this is about?
This conversation is a real roller coaster, said Isabel, sticking her head out of the back window of the second taxi. But my Mandarin is non-existent, and Jason's is really poor, and this taxi driver has started the meter.
No, said Magnus. It's just finding Ragnar is better than having no leads, but it's absolutely backward from how I would want to do this. I don't want to go through him to get the book. I don't even want to go through Xin Yun.
They're the only leads we have, my love,
Alec said.
So I think we're getting in the cabs.
Okay, said Magnus. He kissed Alec. Let's go.
They both got into the back of the first cab, joining only Simon, who had the map open on his phone and gave a thumbs up, though his expression was distant.
Magnus turned to Alec. Okay, so what direction?
Alec gripped the scrap of cloth.
Still west.
Magnus leaned forward and spoke to the driver in Mandarin, pointing in a direction. The driver seemed surprised, but after a brief negotiation, acquiesced.
Just tell me when we should turn, Magnus said.
And Alec nodded, and the taxis took off into the night. The last time Magnus had been in Shanghai was 20 years ago. It had been only months into the rebirth of the city, its sudden strange second life in which it would become the biggest city in China, flooded with money and new growth. Even now, there were new skyscrapers going up, new shining lights wherever Magnus looked. It was still itself. It was still Shanghai, but it had changed so much in such a short time. They made their way out of the center of the city, leaving the fancy light of Nanjing Road behind. They made their way through the lively district of Jing'an until they were in the vast residential blocks that rolled away forever into the distance, new high-rises and a few garden apartment complexes. Another few turns, and they were entering an older neighborhood, a place left over from the Shanghai that the international luxury brands and skyscrapers were busily replacing with a bright sheen of modernity. While they rode, Magnus tried to explain the unusual downworlder situation in Shanghai.
"Back in the 19th century," he said, "Shanghai was divided into a bunch of international concessions, land that was leased to other countries within the city. Britain had one, France, the United States. They were still officially part of China, but the other countries could kind of do whatever they wanted within the concession borders. When that happened, the downworlders of Shanghai struck their own deal and were given their own concession."
"What?" said Alec, turning to look at Magnus. "There's a permanent downworlder-run neighborhood here?"
"There are a few-sided mundanes living there as well, probably," said Magnus. "But yes."
"If they had a permanent neighborhood, does that mean there's no shadow market in Shanghai?"
Magnus laughed. "Oh, there's a shadow market, all right."
Quickly, the streets became too narrow for the taxis, and Magnus and the others abandoned them to continue on foot. Simon looked oddly pale, although not in the vampire way he once had.
"Shadow hunters don't get carsick," Jace was saying.
"Did your dad teach you that?"
Simon said, wobbling slightly from foot to foot.
"Was he ever in a car in his life? Was he ever in a car in Shanghai in his life?"
Clary and Isabel exchanged looks.
"You all right, Simon?" said Clary.
"Hey, those who don't do well in stop-and-go traffic also serve the angel," Alec called over. "Can we go?"
Sometimes Magnus wasn't sure being a shadow hunter was better for Simon than being a vampire had been. He was no longer undead. That was definitely good, of course. But there was a certain blood and thunder machismo that could creep in uncomfortably around the edges of shadow hunter culture. Valentine had wielded that narrative of inborn strength, of supremacy, like a weapon. It was an attitude that had always threatened to resurface among the Nephilim. Bending and twisting himself to fit inside it had nearly broken Jace. If it hadn't been for Alec, Isabel, and Clary. The tracking rune had led them into one of the remaining pockets of old Shanghai, from before the wide boulevards and the shining silver malls. They had to walk in single file to avoid blocking the way for pedestrians and cyclists. And it was still crowded here, too. Everywhere, a flow of people, bicycles, animals, like a rushing river, in a way that reminded Magnus of a dozen cities he'd been to that were always the same and yet always new. Shanghai, Singapore, Hong Kong, Bangkok, Jakarta, Tokyo, New York. Magnus hadn't told anyone yet, but he felt something within the glowing crack in his chest, a swelling node of magic. Not evil magic, he thought. Not even alien magic. His own magic, pooling within him. It was creating a kind of aura at the edges of his vision, bright blue and sparkling. The aura seemed to pull and bend in response to other auras that Magnus wasn't otherwise aware of. He wasn't sure how to bring it up. He guessed they would find Ragnar, then through Ragnar find Xinyun, and hopefully she would explain the phenomenon to him. Or he hoped he could wait until they could do some research tomorrow. Clary was examining a series of signs covered in felt-tip handwriting, tacked up to the windows of a closed storefront. Magnus gestured above them.
"It's a hair salon. That's just their menu."
"Isabel," Simon Stage whispered. "Can we take home one of the chickens?"
"Yes," said Isabel. "You can take home as many as you can catch."
"Don't encourage him," said Clary.
To Magnus, she said, "Is this the kind of place Ragnar would be?" Magnus looked around at the narrow lanes, the concrete walls tacked with notices and ads and stenciled graffiti. He could smell animals and food and garbage and
people living too close together, everything unchanged for decades in a place that seemed to be transforming itself hourly. This is not really where Ragnar would live, he said slowly. But it is exactly where Ragnar would hide.
Unless he knows we're coming, said Jace.
If he knows we're coming, said Magnus, why would he stay in Shanghai at all? He's an expert in dimensional magic. He could portal anywhere. He could go to the spiral labyrinth and hide if he wanted to. They don't know he's being controlled or whatever it is.
But the tracking rune makes it clear he is still in Shanghai, said Alec. So he doesn't know we're coming.
Or, said Jace, he wants to be found.
Magnus hadn't thought of that, but he agreed it was a possibility. Being enthralled to Samael and being friendly toward Magnus were not necessarily incompatible, at least not in the mind of Shin Yun, and maybe not in the mind of Ragnar either. On the other hand, did Ragnar expect him to arrive with 5 shadow hunters? 1, sure. But 5? He was getting jumpy. His wound tickled. The tracking rune led them to a shabby white apartment building. Spiky black graffiti was splashed across one side, over the peeling paint. Alec in the lead, they went in, following him up 2 flights of stairs to a dingy apartment door in a dingy carpeted hallway. Magnus was about to knock, but then hesitated. Alec gave him a look and banged on the door for him. After a moment, it opened, revealing a bald, bearded, goat-legged fairy gentleman who gawked in open-mouthed horror at discovering an entire squad of shadow hunters at his door.
"You can't come in,"
he yelped in Shanghainese, much louder than Magnus would have expected.
"They don't speak any Chinese," said Magnus politely in Mandarin. "English, if you please. It's not like it's any effort for a fairy."
The fairy didn't take his wide eyes off the shadow hunters.
"You can't come in,"
he said in English. "Hi," said Alec. "We actually don't have any business with you at all, and we're sorry to bother you.
You'll never find anything,"
the fairy shrieked.
"My hands are cleaned